It is Saturday morning. It is 10 o'clock. And this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Stig Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we would like to welcome everybody, especially the regulars. Without you, no reason to get up on a Saturday morning and do this. But we love you and we'll do it forever as long as you keep listening. New people, if you happened upon us and don't know anything about it, it is a financial show. We discuss all kinds of financial just concepts, ideas, information, current news, people, journalists, politicians, anybody who has a mitt in your finances, we'll talk about it. I have to make an announcement right now that we'll make frequently throughout the day. The station's internet is down, and the phone lines are VOIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol, for those of you who don't know that, meaning we have no telephones today. So we will talk about what we want unless you find a way to interrupt us. And the good news is we have one.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to call the show but can't and you want to ask a question, just send us an email. And you can email us at info@vanweefinancial.com. And I'll be monitoring that. And if we get anything that comes in, I will address it on air.
And because we have a communication backup channel like that, I will be giving out a trivia question at the beginning of the second segment. And you can just write in an answer to info@vanweefinancial.com. And should you win, we'll find you. You can include a phone number, and you'll still get a prize. So we apologize, and I have asked Adam, or Adam, asked Adam, Alan, can't say that today. What's your name? Yeah. I asked Alan if the internet were to come back during the show to let us know right away, and we'll announce it on air. So you just got to kind of make do as we do right now, but we'll try to keep your interest anyway. There's certainly a lot to talk about, as there always is when you're talking about money and finance. And especially these days, because things are not normal out there, and it impacts everybody to one degree or another. But what really bothers me a lot lately is listening to the people, because we're in the silly season, listening to people describe incorrectly what's going on out there and give you incomplete information. You know, I've always complained about the three kinds of lies, white lies, damn lies, and what was the other one? I can't remember.
Lies of omission.
Well, that's the fourth one. That's the one that's getting all the attention these days, because, or at least from people like me, because it's so easy. Little things and big things both, the media will just fail to talk about. Quick example is this morning that lunatic comment that was made by Biden that had to do with the blacks versus the Hispanics. And it was just an inordinately crazy thing to say. That got the sum total on NBC, ABC, and CBS of 0 minutes of news. And it's a really big deal.
Can you imagine if Trump had said that?
And why is it a big deal? Why do I talk about it on a financial show? Because this election is going to determine an awful lot about your taxes.
Yeah,
they will net worth.
In the pocketbook, yeah. There's no doubt. And there's not even an attempt to lie about it or disguise it. They're very honest about their plans for taxes.
Taxes, the whole thing. This is really critical, people. What we've gained, what we've earned, and the way we're fighting back, we gotta do the right thing and keep it going along. So enough of my lectures. Let's say that for the, I can't remember how many, third week in a row or so, the news from Wall Street has been absolutely stellar.
Yeah, it really was. It was a great week. Last week, we saw large cap tech stocks lead the market higher. And I think it's not that everyone doesn't love to see Amazon and Apple go higher, but I think people are ready to see some other stocks go higher as well.
Yes, they are.
And that happened this week. So
yes, it did.
It was really nice. We saw small caps actually beat large caps for the first time in quite a while. And if you remember a few weeks ago, we said that might happen, and it did. It just kind of made sense. Large caps had really been distancing themselves in gains from the small caps. And at some point, there's got to be some mean reversion. So the large caps have to come back down, or the small caps have to catch up. we prefer to see the small caps catch back up. And that's
a really bullish sign on the market and on the economy.
That's right.
When people are switching down to small caps, they are inherently riskier.
Yep.
And therefore, over the long haul, they tend to return more. But you've got to understand that you're taking more risk. And people shrugged that off this week and bought them like there was no tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that relates to all the good news on COVID. Now, if you just gasped and said, what good news on COVID? That's because they won't talk about it on the news.
Right.
But there actually is a lot of good news on COVID. In fact, it looks like the second sort of wave of COVID that started in June is now on the downslope. So cases were rising almost across the country there for over a month, and now they're actually declining in all but 9 states. And I think that came out, it was actually the stat I saw this morning was something about only 16% of the country is seeing caseloads increase right now, and that's down from well over 50%, if not higher. So,
and all of a sudden, New York schools are going to open.
Yeah, New York schools are paving the way to reopening. I don't know when it'll happen, but it does look like it will happen.
Yeah, the sort of snowball effect of that is that parents get to go back to work.
Yep, that's
and
true.
Therefore, the economy's getting better.
Florida actually peaked in new cases around July 12th with about 15,000 infections in one day. And we're currently running about half of that, or 7,500 cases a day, which is still too many, but way, way down from the 15,000. And Duval County, sort of in the same trend, we saw infections peak around July 16th at over 800, and they're currently running around 300 per day. So even a little bit better than the overall Florida picture is Duval County, because we're less than half of our peak. So that decrease in case count is very favorable to jobs, to the economy, and to the stock market as a whole. So I'm pleased about that. I wish they would talk about it on the news, but you know.
Oh no, not until November 4th.
Right. So with the broader market gaining this week, the indices did very well, as you might imagine. The Dow, which is the only index that is still in the red year to date, gained 3.8%. Well, both the NASDAQ and the S&P notched 2.5% gains. The gains are not very evenly distributed among the sectors, though, and this is going to probably surprise you a little bit. Industrials led the way higher this week, followed by financials and energy. I honestly don't remember the last time I said something like that. It's been a long time.
I vaguely recall hearing that somewhere, but I couldn't tell you when.
And the worst performing sector was healthcare, but even that was up 0.75%. So the worst performing sector was still pretty good.
That is amazing, isn't
yeah.
it?
The U.S. Well, wasn't alone in that either.
No.
We saw a lot of international gains. Europe gained about between 1% and 3%, depending on the country. Germany was up over 3%. And Brazil was one of the few countries not to gain. They lost about 4%. And their year-to-date losses are now 33%. Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I said some places are more volatile than others.
This is true.
All right, after the break, we are going to give out the trivia question. Remember, there's no phone lines today, so it's info@vanwayfinancial.com if you want to either make a guess or make a comment or just whatever it is you want to communicate to us, you can do it that way. But it was Jobs Week, and if you listen to the wrong media, you would think we just stumbled all over ourselves and fell apart. Nothing could be further from the truth. Don't go away. You're listening to the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And before I give out the trivia question, another reminder, we do not have any phone lines today. So anytime, any reason that at all that you'd like to contact us today until further notice, it's just info@vanweefinancial.com. All right, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, as always. The trivia question today refers to, since we're in the earnings season, one of four that we have every year, the term guidance spread. That refers to the percentage of companies raising their forecast versus the number lowering their forecast. Since 2004, the guidance spread has averaged -2.97, so -3%. 3% more companies are lowering their future look at things on average since 2004. This year, I'm going to give you a hint already. It's because of the phone situation. It is not negative this year. What is the percentage spread for the guidance this year? meaning what percentage of companies are saying things are going to get better instead of worse. Compared to a -3 average, this one's a plus. All we need is a number. All right, jobs.
Yeah, a few more things I wanted to get to before jobs,
okay,
though.
Good.
I mentioned we saw some pretty good gains overseas, but it was nothing compared to the biggest winner of the week, which was by far natural gas.
Yep.
Did you?
About darn time, isn't it?
It has had an incredibly volatile year, just all over the place.
They've been giving it away.
It gained over 24% this week and is now down only 24% for the year.
That's pretty much in line with energy in general.
Crazy.
Maybe on the low end of it.
I mean, oil tacked on 2.7% this week, and that narrowed its 2020 loss to just over 70%. Ouch.
Yeah.
Speaking of wild numbers, silver gained over 15% on the week despite a steep drop on Friday. And it's
now time for that too.
56% this year.
Yep.
Gold
having plummeted early in the year.
Yeah, and gold
only
added 3% this week. It still had a nice year. It's up more than 33%. The bond market stayed fairly flat, but tips gained another 0.25% despite being at an all-time high and not paying anything for 3 months.
Well, look at the bull-bear ratio, and people are still so bearish on this market.
Yeah.
It's about two to two and a half times bears over the bulls, and yet the market is just humming along, looking great. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but one thing that's driving some of those things you were talking about is the dollar is losing steam because we're spending so much money. And all I can say to that is, contrary to a whole bunch of the people who are on the right, the economists and so on, who want the dollar strong and stable, I want it down. I want you saw the trade deficit went up with China. You want to see some exporting going on? Just keep pushing the dollar down.
Yeah, the trade deficit actually came in right at almost on forecast. It was 50 million, so not terrible, not good,
whatever. It's just the Chinese portion of it went up again.
Right. I'll talk a little bit about earnings. I won't give away the trivia question, but 68% of companies are beating their earnings targets, and
63%
are beating revenue targets.
That's even better.
Yeah, those numbers are really strong. And, so the forward guidance, that's, if you want to take a guess at that, just email us at info@vanweefinancial.com. Economic data looking pretty good, stronger than expected, almost across the board. The ISM manufacturing report showed expansion for a second month in a row, coming in at 54.2. The expectation was 53.6, and last month was 52.6. So
50
all
and up is expansion.
Really good numbers,
yep.
Yeah. And then the services sector was even better, coming in at 58.1. So massive expansion in the service sector. Now, those numbers are going to look good for a while because there's a lot of room to expand from the shutdowns.
Right.
So especially in services, I mean, that's where the bulk of the layoffs came, in bars, restaurants, that type of thing. So I expect those numbers to continue looking good. And if they don't, that would be a pretty clear warning sign.
It would.
All right, now let's talk about jobs. So the ADP report came out Wednesday, and on the surface, it looked like a real dud. The expectation was for the economy to add 1.2 million jobs, but the actual number was just 167,000. Ouch. Mm. But there's more to the story.
Naturally.
Apparently, they miscounted a little bit in June, and they added 1.9 million jobs back to the June numbers, going from 2.4 million up to 4.3 million. So it more than made up for the miss in July, but no one would mention that.
Oh, heavens no.
No.
You got to really look around to uncover things like this.
I couldn't believe that when I saw that number. That is a huge miss, almost 100% off. I mean, ouch. So based on those numbers, it was really hard to predict what the number would look like on Friday. In addition, we had initial jobless claims, which came in at 1.186 million. That's the lowest number since the start of the pandemic. And continuing claims dropped to 16 million from 17 million. And that's the lowest number we've seen post-pandemic as well, or during the pandemic. With all that being said, there was a ton of anticipation for the number on Friday. The estimates were around 1.5 million jobs added and the unemployment rate to be around 10.5. When the actual number came out, it actually beat the estimates on both. It came in at 1.8 million and the unemployment rate dropped to 10.2 from 11.1. So pretty much a strong report all around. I think that the futures were way off Friday morning. As soon as that number came out, they came almost back to even. I think they even flashed green for a minute before going negative.
Yep.
So we just couldn't have been much better than that report.
Absolutely agreed. Some things that you won't hear also. The number of unemployed people dropped 1.4 million. Black unemployment dropped 0.8%. Now, a year ago, it got down to 5.9, and it jumped to 16.8.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, that's what we call LIFO, last in, first out. So as the minority people in all sections were getting hired toward the end of the big boom that went up through January and at least part of February, they were getting lower and lower numbers. Well, immediately when this thing happened, a lot of layoffs happened. And when that happens, the last people to get hired are the first people out. So black unemployment jumped to 16.8%. Then it went down in the last 2 months from 15.4 to 14.6. And those numbers are still awful, of course. But when you're bringing it down by the better share of a point every month, something's going better. Now, the same thing happened to the less educated among us. The less than high school population had a big jump, too. But that went down 1.2%. Compared to the people with bachelor's degrees or higher, that only dropped 0.2%. So that's good news also. Now, the length of unemployment was very interesting. The under 5 weeks rose 364,000 people, but the 5 to 14 weeks dropped 6,327,000. So a lot of people who were, let's say they were off for a month or 5 weeks, a lot of those people have reentered the workforce now. That's a really positive thing. Unfortunately, the 15 to 26 is still not looking that good. Those are going to be the ones where the business is closed and didn't open up, that sort of thing. Part-time people, for economic reasons, dropped 619,000 people. They went from part-time to full-time. That's good. The people not in the labor force, we talk about the participation rate all the time, the people not in the labor force dropped by 492,000. These numbers are really, really strong, which is why you're only going to hear about them here and not in the mainstream media. So just thought I'd try to make everybody feel better. My personal forecast for the market, I think it's got more upside. And we are so close to setting an S&P record that I would almost be surprised if we didn't get there this week.
And if it happened intraday, you might see a pullback and then maybe make another run at it later in the summer. But I wouldn't be surprised either. The way things are going right now, there's a lot of good news. If you look for it, you won't hear it if you just listen. But if you look for it, you'll find it.
Yeah, I'm thinking that things are setting up pretty nicely right now. The only thing that could really curtail this, aside from something totally unforeseen, is if the virus makes another stab at bigger numbers again, like a third wave. But I don't see that happening.
I mean, it's possible.
It is possible.
But it wouldn't be following the trend. What it appears to be is that you get a big sort of surge and then a tapering like we saw in New York and then later in Florida, Texas, California, Arizona. And then there's a few states that never really got a surge,
right,
and they're getting it now. These are typically less populated states, but it seems like it's made that big surge. Now, no one knows what will happen, but even globally, the numbers are flattening and maybe even starting to decline. But across the U.S., they have definitely peaked and are now declining. So,
the longer something like that is around, it tends to weaken a bit through every iteration. Now, nobody can say for sure on this one. We were talking with some people the other day thinking, I think the strangest thing about this virus, this particular strain, was that it would only make sense, being what it is, that hot, humid weather would kill it.
Nope.
And they even did some studies like that.
That
they found out
that
the sun will get it.
So that there was a theory, because the Sun Belt states got hit after New York, that as it got hotter, people retreat indoors to air conditioning, and air conditioning circulates the virus. So that's just a theory, but I've seen it several times.
Yeah, it's a real strange thing we're living through right now, and a lot of us have had it hit home because for a long time nobody knew anybody who had it. Well, now I do, and it really makes you think twice when you go out maybe just adhering to the rules is not a half bad idea.
No, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. If we're going to beat this thing, I don't know how many of these things that we hear are good, bad, or indifferent. I know they change their mind a lot, and there's a lot of restrictions, but a little common sense goes a long ways. But meanwhile, I'm very happy to see people getting back to work and businesses opening again. It's a pleasure, and if this keeps happening, there's going to be a sigh of relief in the market. Look out above, I say. All right, we'll be right back after a short break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still open, even though the phone lines are not. So if you want to take a guess, shoot us an email at info@vanweefinancial.com. The earnings season is in full bore, and it's going very well right now. The guidance, meaning the forward-looking performance of these companies as expressed by the CEOs of the company, the guidance over the past, 16 years has been -3% on average. It is a positive percent this year. I want to know what percent that is. So if you shoot us a note with a number, you never know. Might just get it. My point is going to be very simple. It's not a normal year. So I like that. All right, Adam, you were carrying on or wanted to.
Yeah, just a funny story. Okay. I got an email from one of the financial websites that we subscribe to with the top 20 performing funds of this year to date. And they were heavily, as you might imagine, invested in gold and silver. In fact, I would say at least half of them are miners, gold miners, mm-hmm. silver, or gold ETFs. Then there's some cloud computing and some technology funds like that.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing you wouldn't expect. But the number one performing fund is called ARK. It's ARK is the company that sells these ETFs. It's not one of the major players, but they have some good funds. It's called the ARK Next Generation Internet ETF. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm familiar with this is that every year I put a small amount of money in my kids, they have a little account at TD that we manage, and I put the same small amount every Christmas. I just want to get them familiar with investing. And my son this year decided that he wanted to invest in Fortnite because all his friends were playing it, and it's super popular, and it's kind of retained its popularity, which a lot of things these days
doesn't seem to have been the flash on the pan that so many
right.
Have.
And so Fortnite is a game that's it's actually owned by Epic Games, which is a privately held company, so there's no way to invest directly. So it turns out that Tencent is another company. It owns 40% of Epic Games, and it is the largest holding in this ARKW, which is the ARK Next Generation Internet ETF, the number one performing fund this year. So I bought it for him. The fund is up 75.74% this year. So my son has apparently a bright future in the financial planning arena if he wants to go that
don't
route.
Don't you wish that little sum that you put into his account had a couple more zeros on it?
Well, I wish I'd put my own money into
it. There's that too. That's funny. But you know, I've a name for that. Like I've dubbed so many things over my many, many years. I call it backyard investing. And all it means is you look out and say, where does my money go and where does my time go? And who's getting my attention and who's getting my purchases? And you invest in them. If you're at Home Depot all the time and it's always busy, invest at Home Depot. There are there's things like retail ETFs that hold it too. There's a lot of ways to own something like that without taking the risk of an individual stock. But it makes perfectly good sense to me.
Yeah, it was, I found it funny that he picked out the best out of all the funds in the world, the best performing fund year to date.
For a very logical reason.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually brilliant because, his friends, anywhere in the neighborhood of 12-year-old boy, you know what this game is. It's mm-hmm. everywhere.
Yeah, well, even us old people have heard of it. So
yeah.
Got to be something to it.
No doubt about it.
All right, in the ongoing series on Social Security claiming, I'm going to do another little one today, and it's... We're getting a little more complicated now because we're getting into couples, and there are a lot of strategies for couples as they approach the age for Social Security. And some of them are very simple, and some of them are not very simple, and some are dependent on certain things, and most of them are just kind of unknown to people. So I'm trying to keep it kind of short and simple and do one concept at a time. But the generalization of all of this is a simple concept. There are three things that Americans fear dramatically. One of them is public speaking. One of them is dying. And the third one they fear even more than either of those two, and that is running out of money. So the purpose of Social Security claiming strategies is to maximize your lifetime income from Social Security. So you can't just say to people, just claim it whenever you want and take the money and live a long time. That doesn't really get you anywhere. You got to consider your circumstances. So today we're going to talk about married couples who are both qualified. And qualified means that they have accounts at Social Security that they can claim on when they choose to, and starting, of course, at age 62 for the earliest possibility. So in this case, it's the couple that is of similar ages, both have worked a long time. It's very common because for the past few decades, the two-earning family has been very, very commonplace. So this scenario we'll see played out quite a lot. They're similar age and both qualified. So one strategy, which is a very, very common one, people understand the rudiments of Social Security claiming, they wait until their full retirement age, and then they both claim. And they can retire if they want to, or they can keep working. There will be no reductions in what you get from Social Security because you're of full retirement age. So claim and live happily ever after, and you'll make quite a bit of money. But that's not for everybody. There are some who would rather do a little bit more planning and perhaps do a little bit better down the road. And that involves some fairly intricate planning depending on your circumstance. But in this circumstance, there was a great claiming strategy that was very simple. You're both approaching the age, or let's say you're even approaching 62. The person with the lower accrued benefit would file somewhere between 62 and full retirement age. And when that happened, the other one would claim Social Security spousal benefit only. Well, you can still do that under one condition. The one filing for the spousal benefit only, and that's called a restricted application for spousal benefits only. And that one would then receive half of the other spouse's check every month, and they could run the higher account up to age 70, thereby getting the 8% a year all the way through. Well, at 70, they would kick in the higher earner's benefit, and the spouse, if half of that benefit were greater than what the spouse is receiving, the spouse could switch over to spousal benefit there. It's a brilliant strategy. It works, and it makes a lot of difference over a lot of time for a lot of people. But there's a catch, naturally. In the last big revision to the Social Security rules, this was taken away, effective for people born in 1954 and later. So if you were born in 1963 or earlier, and this situation appeals to you for the long run, it is very possible that you can still do this. But when you think about it, if you were born in 1953 or earlier, the minimum age you're going to be by the end of this year is 67. Well, at 70, there is no need any longer to delay taking anything because nothing good happens when you're over 70. You might as well take your benefit and walk away because there is no reason not to. You're just giving it up if you don't. So if for a couple of years, there might still be people who are qualified to do this to some degree or the other because they were born before 1954. But there aren't many, and it's too bad. I missed this one. It was a game we used to love to play. But next week, I'll go into the little different scenario where you were born in 1954 or later and still have a similar outlook on life and a similar financial situation, and we'll see what we can do about that because there are some more little tricks that can be played out there. So always remember that Social Security claiming should not just be something that you do. You walk into the office or you get online and say, I'm claiming. And remember, too, that if you go to an office, Social Security office, you can't necessarily trust that the person you get in there is going to be the very best at all the little details of trying to do a good claiming strategy. So understanding what's going on is very important, and planning for it is very important, because for the most part, and there are some limited exceptions to this, for the most part, the day you say start it up, it's over, you've done it, and you can't get out of it. I'll talk a little bit about the exception over the next couple of weeks too, but it's not flexible like it used to be either. So just keep that in mind. We're going to take our last little break, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanwee Financial. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And I remind everybody once again that we have no phone lines working today and no internet. So we will take answers or questions at info@vanweefinancial.com, and it happens that we have one. But first I want to mention this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794, and as we say at my house, let Troy do it. And he did it yesterday. How about that? Anyway, we have Marshall. A lot of you have heard Marshall on the phone lines, but we only have him by email right now. So he phoned in a trivia guess, which we'll talk about first, and then a question, which we'll also address. So yep. The guess was?
4%.
And that is quite a lot too low.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, it's unusual to be positive. It's even more unusual to be more than 4. And it's even more unusual to be quite a bit more than 4.
Yeah, no doubt.
So this is a rare occurrence in the earnings season thus far that I would just be delighted if it holds up to the end. So, all right. And what else does Marshall ask?
Marshall, so he sent in a movie called Targeting U.S., The People's Fight Against the IRS. It's a production that's quite revealing, he says. I haven't seen it myself, but
I have not
it sounds
either.
Interesting. The question is, in the movie, there's a discussion of how the Obama administration twisted law to stiff the bondholders altogether, yet gave the stock to the union. My question is, how can they do that and not drive everyone in the quote-unquote markets up the wall as precedent?
Yeah, and he's talking about Chrysler Corporation. And the answer is very simple. The financial crisis was of such magnitude and complexity that nobody had time and energy and focus, I guess, to do anything about it. That they printed those bonds and sold them to people, unsuspecting people, and the bonds were printed with the guarantee that they would be honored prior to the common stock. And they weren't. And the answer to the question is, he just did it. The answer to why it wasn't caught or argued about or whatever is just that we were in such a world of financial hurt. There were too many things going on around us, and there wasn't anybody there to bird dog it. And that was when the collateralized mortgage obligations and so on were falling flat on their face because we'd been lied about there, too. The real problem that took place back in that era, 2007, 2008, and 2009, was that we were lied to by everyone. And only a few people who were actually inside all this stuff had any insight as to what was actually happening out there and why. And we have a name for those people today. They're called billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And you know some of the names.
Yeah, there's a good movie about it. And I can't remember the name off the top of my head.
Big Short.
Yeah, it explains it very well. It doesn't. I don't think it deals with the Chrysler situation.
No, it doesn't.
But
two things are related was the proximity and time and the complexity,
right,
and the problems in the market.
Yeah, it was definitely something that, well, I shouldn't say definitely, but probably something we will not see again in our lifetime.
Right.
In that same sequence of events, we may see some of things that are similar, but just the confluence of everything that went wrong at the same time was pretty unprecedented.
And I was in this business at the time, and the first clue that came across was the danger that the prime money market fund was going to break the buck, as they call it, meaning that the history, a money market mutual fund is worth a dollar, but there's no law that says it's worth a dollar. There's precedent that it's worth a dollar. And if you want to have a good reputation in the market with a money market fund, you better keep that dollar. So it had happened. If it had never happened, I probably would have panicked. But it had happened once before in 2002, I think, maybe. And what happened, people at that point, people like Vanguard and Schwab, people who ran money markets, they would take their own capital and inject it into the money market fund to keep the $1. So when I heard it in 07, September 07, I think it was, I heard that this was happening again. And I said, well, as usual, the big outfits are just going to inject capital into the money markets and everything will be fine at a dollar. Oh, my gosh, was I incorrect. And the rest is history, as they say. But had it not been for that positive experience the time before, I think a whole bunch of us would have been looking at this in a lot different light. But it just seemed like another one of those things. And, yeah, I can be sorry about it all I want, but I'd like to think we just walked away smarter.
Yeah. Marshall also sent me another article this week because he had heard us talking about protecting your home from deed theft. And he sent an article from Kiplinger that was pretty good. In 2008, the FBI identified house stealing as the latest scam on the block.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, it's popped up periodically in big cities mainly. The FBI doesn't break it out separately in its crime statistics, so we don't know how frequent it is. But just the fact that you really don't hear about it outside of ads saying that you need to buy a service to protect yourself from it, it would lend me to believe it's not a huge problem. But what the article says is that you don't need to pay someone $15 a month to protect yourself. You can do it for free. Just check your property record on the website of your county's register of deeds. So go to, I believe it's the City of Jacksonville Property Appraiser website. You can do a search under your name or under your address and just make sure that your property is still registered to you. And that is that will give you an indication that maybe if something was going wrong. But if it looks like you're still the owner on that, that's who officially records it. So that's a really easy way to do it.
Now, I have not checked Duval County or St. John's County or any of the other local ones, but there are many counties across the country who have a free service, whereas if there's any action on your home title, they will email you.
They mentioned that as well. I don't know that Duval has that, but they might. I just have never seen it.
I would pretty much promise anybody out there who's listening, wherever they are, that if they don't have it in your county today, they will soon.
Probably.
This company that's selling that, quote, insurance, they better take their money quick and get out of this thing because they're about to get shot down. They're getting shot down by everybody. I first shot them down more than a month ago on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I said was if you've got a service like LifeLock, which I have had for many years, they will notify you if there's any action like that that seems suspicious. And then the other thing that anybody can do free of charge nowadays, thanks to all the problems we've had in the country, you can go into all the credit agencies and freeze your credit. And if they find any little application thing that dings on your account, then they will have to notify you because your credit is locked. It's a wonderful and easy thing to do, and if you want a really, really quick way to figure out how to accomplish that, I always recommend ClarkHoward.com because Clark has such an easy and understandable set of instructions for things just that complex, and he'll literally make it so easy you can link right to it. So that's our suggestion. Don't get hung up and caught up in the $15 a month to save your house from being stolen. The FBI's fastest growing white collar crime in the country right now. Well, it may be, but you know, if it happens three times and it happens three more, that's 100% increase, but it's only six.
Yeah.
So don't worry about it. But then again, don't just sit there and do nothing about it either. Check your county's website and see if you can get a free service like that. Freeze your credit or do whatever you want. Just look in monthly or whatever. Because these things take time.
Yeah, in most cases, it's your most expensive asset, so take care of it.
Yep. Well, we don't have time to dig into a big something. So I wanted to just close out with this came from Investopedia, and it's called, Sorry, I can hardly stop laughing. Modern Monetary Theory, or MMT.
I've been seeing this all over the place.
Can I just John Maynard Keynes is alive and well in the 21st century, people.
I want to sum it up. Basically, it's money doesn't matter anymore.
Uh-huh.
That's essentially the theory. Mm-hmm. I mean, from everything I've seen, we can spend our way into being rich.
Spend our way into prosperity. So instead of thinking of taxes as income and government spending as expenses, MMT proponents say that fiscal policy is merely a representation of how much money the government is putting into the economy or taking out. So when they want to dampen things down and control inflation, all they have to do is raise taxes. And when they want to pump up the economy, all they have to do is spend money. And you can print all you want, and you're never going to default, because if you were going to default, you'd just print more money. And you all know that we don't even need a printing press anymore. All we need is a computer and the password to it, which is held in the hands of the Federal Reserve. And all they have to do is just say, thank you very much. Your money will be in there tomorrow morning. What could possibly go wrong? You can't believe this stuff, folks. At least you shouldn't, but it's true. All right, we'll see you next week. Sorry about the technicalities today. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.